When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jumpers or intros, microchips plus, iPhone cameras plus, taco salad plus, bodas, Olive Garden plus, white phosphor plus, Sabra Hamas, Hasbara sus.
Welcome to Bad Hasbara, the world's most moral podcast. My name is Matt Lieb. I am going to be your host for this evening. I don't know, for this episode, for this podcast. Welcome to episode one. There was kind of a half episode that came out just a bit ago in which I explained what the podcast was going to be. But this is technically episode. We're starting now. So don't even that other one is not canon. All the stories that I told on that one, that does. If I tell them again, I'm allowed because I didn't tell them on this episode until now. Nothing else counts. So anyways, hi, I'm Matt Lieb. Very excited for you to listen to this podcast about Hasbara. What is Hasbara? Hasbara is a Hebrew word for shit I just made up to explain why that thing you saw isn't actually what you saw. Your eyes are lying to you, and I am telling you the truth. Sleep now. And today, we're going to be talking about all sorts of stuff. We are going to be talking with a good friend of mine. He is a social worker. He is a Jewish anti-Zionist, and he is a creator on TikTok. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome Ben Ziggy.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me.
Of course, man. It's going good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Taking a break from work on vacation. Hope to get some work done. You know,
you're going
to
work on vacation?
Yeah. You know, around the house, stuff like that.
I'm doing that, too. That's literally what I'm doing this very second. I shouldn't be, but you know, sometimes podcasting is just more important than family. You know what I'm saying? So I want to talk about our history. Ben, this is the first time I think that you and I have, well, not the first time. I feel like we probably have interacted vocally before. At least it feels that way. We know each other from Jew Book 2015. I would say.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
So for those of you who are not familiar with Jew Book, Jew Book was, you see, back in the day, Facebook started to be trash. And what happened was Facebook became this place where the only good thing were these things called Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. And for Jewish people, there was a bunch of Jewish Facebook groups where a bunch of Jews got together, and it ran the entire spectrum politically. There was like super Zionist groups, there were anti-Zionist groups, there were liberal Zionist groups, and we all ended up like meeting each other and fighting. And it was fun and traumatic, and it really like really niche. Like I feel like if any outside observers saw what we were talking about, they'd be like, what the fuck are these Jews talking about?
Yeah, it was very much like this balkanized version of Jewish internet. And like you would take arguments from one group to another and just change whatever the topic was, but the beef remained constant.
Yeah, there's people who like I'm certain we're still beefing, even though I haven't been on Facebook since like 2017. Like, but I'm certain that we are still talking shit about each other.
It's actually funny. In one of the groups, so I told you that somebody posted that, oh, you're doing this podcast. So she said, yeah, Matt is doing this podcast. And then a comment other one was says, tell that coward to unblock me. I'm not even kidding.
I love that. I didn't even know. Yeah. I didn't even know I had blocked some. I mean, I'm certain I did. You know, I have a pretty heavy block finger when it comes to psychopaths. Mm-hmm. But maybe I will. Maybe I will unblock them. There was there was just like a lot of great characters on there, and like a lot of the discussions that we had. You know, back in the day, it was just an inter-Jewish mm-hmm. discussion. Arguments about Zionism that weren't being taken to, I would say, like the outside world. And for a lot of different inside, reasons.
Sorry, I was going to say, it was a lot of inside baseball sort of conversations that wasn't like happening in front of like the rest of the people on Twitter and mm-hmm. I guess Instagram at the time, for sure. Yeah.
And the reason for that, at least for me specifically, I remember there was a long time where I was really uncomfortable talking about like saying my full feelings about Israel in front of people who weren't Jewish mm-hmm. Because of the fact that I was like, you know, I mean, I was like a big critic of it, but I would be suspicious every time someone who wasn't Jewish was a critic. I'd be like, well, why do you even care? Even though they agreed with literally everything I said, mm-hmm. I would be like, yeah, but it's weird that you think that. Like, only I should be able to recognize apartheid. For you, there's got to be something more to it. I don't know if that was your feeling or experience at any point. I'm actually interested to know more about you, Ben, in terms of where you're coming from.
So I could do a whole, like, several episode arc on my whole Jewish life. But in short, I was in sort of a lot of Jewish religious communities for a while. Mm-hmm. And as I started to take, you know, some distance from those groups, especially around when Trump started to rise, that was like, hey, this place doesn't feel safe for me. Mm-hmm. A lot of where I went was online in a lot of these Facebook groups. And at that point, like, I would say I was more one of those people who was like, well, I support Israel, but I'm against the Israeli government. And like, a lot of these groups, and especially Bad Hasbara, like, really allowed me to like flesh out and explore and reflect on some of those things. And like having those discussions out loud was what really pushed me, like, as much as a lot of things left, you know, to being not just like I support Palestinians, but like I am staunch anti-Zionist, and recognizing how that contradiction had to play out, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so did you was there any kind of like moment in which you decided to, you know, take it from the Jewish Facebook groups out into the world?
I think part of it was when like just going on like left Twitter, which is a disaster area, which I'm so glad is, I think, slowly dying.
Yeah.
It's like one of the last things that's going on Twitter other than just like Bitcoin bros.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was on Twitter and kind of reflecting those and taking actual my opinions, because Jew Book was still sort of like a bubble.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
And actually taking it out into left spaces where a lot of those views had to be really countered, and some of the assumptions that I had, which were wrong. For example, I used to actually believe the notion that, you know, from the river to the sea was this genocidal notion for, you know, the killing of all Jews mm-hmm. in Israel. And then for the first time on Twitter, I actually had to like defend those views, and I'm like, oh, I can't stand on, I don't have a leg to stand on here, it's wrong. I mean, I was also like, I think I was ready, you know, I was primed at some point, because a lot of people can have those, you know, views challenged, and nothing will happen. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for sure, there's, I would say, a shocking amount of people can have those views challenged and not move a single inch. And I think that is something that I've seen now to a degree where I'm just like, well, what's going to do it for you, buddy? which is one of the reasons I wanted to start this podcast, because I wanted to talk to people who I'm like, is everyone else going fucking crazy or am I insane?
You are not. Actually, I think it's something that maybe you might be familiar with. So, and it, as a social worker, I treat people. And one of the things that I work in is actually substance use treatment. And a lot of people, if you're not familiar, there are something called the five stages of change. It's called the trans something stages of change. I can't remember what it's called because I don't have a textbook in front of me.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone is like looking to change or heal. You know, there are different stages that they're in. And the first one is called pre-contemplation. And that is at the point when they have zero interest in changing and there's nothing you can do. Their life could be falling apart. They could be drinking, falling down the gutter. And you could be like, hey, man, you've got blood on you. Where did that come from? And they'll be like, I don't know. Yeah. And I really do think the change from like understanding what Israel actually is, you know, can very much be applied to this. You know, if you are very much deep in that mindset, there is no facts. There is nothing, no information that's going to penetrate you.
So you're alluding to, with me, I was a drug addict for many years, and then I'm now a sober person. Mm-hmm. So I've been sober for about 14 years. And like, I also have noticed the similarities between substance abuse and Zionism. Like Israel is like heroin in for many people, in that you would like literally sell your soul in order to keep going with it. I've seen that happen, and I've experienced it, dude. I tell you, heroin. The thing about heroin though is like heroin. I feel like everyone can get down with, like, you know, heroin is like, you know, it doesn't see color, you know what I mean? Like, heroin doesn't care what religion, what race, ethnicity, how much money you have. Like, it feels good for everybody.
And I think kind of like heroin, or unlike heroin, I don't know, you can say that, there isn't a heroin lobby that is paying like $1,200. I guess there kind of is, you know, paying thousands of dollars for new heroin users to take a trip to heroin land.
Oh, God, I want to go to heroin land. Oh, dude, I want to do Birthright in heroin land so bad.
I'd be like, you know, heroin is why people first started making cherry tomatoes. You know, right? It's just like,
you know, if you didn't have heroin, then you wouldn't have that heart stent that's in your father's heart right now. So, you know, maybe talk a little less shit about heroin. Oh, man. I do love the idea that, like, as part of, you know, reparations for the Holocaust, Germany helped fund heroin for every Jew. they got us again. So this group, this podcast is named, I got the name specifically from one of the groups where we talked a lot, which was Bad Hasbara. I will say that for a good portion of this podcast, there are going to be certain like words that I'm saying in Hebrew that are words I've only read and not quite heard. So I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Hasbara is how it looks. Mm-hmm. Hasbara is something I've heard someone else say. You know, if you know the correct pronunciation, I don't know, write it in.
Well, here's the thing, Matt, is that Hebrew is old as shit.
That's true.
So we don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. We don't know for sure. Yeah.
We don't actually know. That's the truth.
Yeah. So basically, if the way I'm pronouncing it is just the way it's going to be pronounced, that's how it's going to be, and we're just going to go with it. So speaking of Hasbara, we have a few examples of some fun stuff that happened. I mean, since the 7th, the internet has become this, I would say, I don't want to say cesspool because I feel like that, you know, it's always a cesspool.
Exactly. It was already a cesspool.
Yeah. But now it is
distilled.
Yes, exactly. Distilled and almost refined in a way that I'm like, oh, I know this cesspool. I've been in this cesspool for years and years. And so I'm now seeing a lot of it like breakthrough and Twitter especially. I think Elon has decided, I don't know how often you're on Twitter, but
not a lot.
So Elon Musk, he does not like the Jews, but in order to not get yelled at, and in order to finally have an advertiser that wants him, he has decided to hide behind his love of Israel in order to not be called an anti-Semite by the ADL. So there's been a lot of like my For You page on Twitter is nothing but all of like the greatest hits of Hasbarists from years past. I mean, we've got Hen Mazig, I like Richie Torres is he's everywhere. Rabbi Shmuley, he is everywhere. He is just like they are tweeting up a storm.
His daughter is also like a new burgeoning star on TikTok.
Oh yeah, yeah, dude. So his daughter,
not the sex shop one, a different
a different one. Okay, I thought you were talking about the one who like sold like kosher lube.
No, a different one.
Okay, a different one. I you know, I'm
a, he's a lot of kids.
It makes sense. He has a lot of kids. That's kind of his whole thing. Is just like he's the rabbi who fucks. I believe that is what he is known for.
He's the rabbi who fucks. He's also the rabbi who was friends with Michael Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like he's a problematic guy. I mean, I feel like Rabbi Shmuley got famous from he had a primetime reality TV show, and it was basically where he was sort of a relationship guide, if I remember correctly, and he would teach people, you know, that the key to a good marriage is when you do a lot of fucky sucky, and and it was on TV, and that's kind of where he became sort of a national figure, even though he's still kind of like a, I don't know.
He also ran for Congress at one point.
Oh, did he?
I think in New Jersey. The funny thing is, like, as a rabbi, and he comes from like the same like group or world that I was in, which is Chabad, where I was for a while. But in the Chabad, he's not really taken seriously. Like, he's not like a big figure there. You know, he's kind of like viewed as kind of a joke. And, yeah, you know, exactly as the way we see him. Like, it's a very narrow niche of people who actually find him insightful. And that's what I find interesting about his fame.
That's interesting. I would figure he would at least have like Chabadnik support. It's
so, not a lot.
So he's mostly, it seems to me then mostly what he is like, if you are someone who needs to have a photo op next to a rabbi who says, nah, he's all right.
Exactly. You know,
then he's your guy. Okay. So that's a cool little career he has. But yeah, like I've been seeing him, I've been seeing a bunch of other, you know, great Hasbars, but then I've also seen some new ones. Oh, I'm sorry, Ben, did you have something you were going to say?
I was going to say, some old like Jew Book alumni, Rudy Rockman is one. What's his name? The guy from Canada. He's like the indigenous activist.
Oh my god, yes.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. I remember him.
Oh,
he was
driving it. Ryan Bellarose.
Yes. Is he the one who is his whole thing is defending Zionism because it is an indigenous rights movement?
Yeah, he's like one of the guys who really pushed that into like Jewish consciousness. Like he's one of like Rudy Rockman was another one.
Yeah.
Yehuda Cohen. Like that again, that's another thing that's like relatively recent, like
yeah,
mostly since 2010, 2014.
Oh, that is that's a wonderful little rabbit hole to go down is people, because you'll, I mean, if you'll see the majority of people who are indigenous and talking about Zionism. They are certainly not saying that the indigenous people of the land are the Zionists.
Like,
that is not a position that they're taking. But, you know, that, of course, leaves a beautiful opening for someone who's both indigenous and, you know, and a grifter, and you know, these are all people that we're going to for sure go in do some deep dives into as this podcast goes on, because they're all fascinating. Like, the entire world of Hasbara is just it's a series of different grifters who found a niche that works for them. You know, it's like if Israel didn't exist, they'd be selling NFTs, you know. They'd be, they would be doing multi-level marketing schemes, drop shipping. Like, these guys are, they've found something and they've grabbed onto it. But I found some new people, and I very much enjoy just going through my Twitter timeline and just seeing what the new Hasbara line is. A fun one recently was this guy who has this. So I don't know how to pronounce his name, Luai Ahmed. And he had a tweet in which he says, "Did they call the death of 377,000 Yemenis a genocide? Nope. Did they call the death of 236,000 Afghans a genocide? Nine. Did they call the death of," and then he just goes on and on. Here's
his implication here that Afghans speak German?
I don't know why he wrote nine for the Afghans one. I'm not really sure. As it kind of goes on, there's just different versions of no in different languages. And like Somalis, did they call the death of 500,000 Somalis a genocide? And then I believe that's a Japanese for no next to it. And I'm like,
the Iraqi, the funny is the one next to Iraqi, that's Hebrew, low.
Yeah. Low.
And the Libyans one is, I think that's Russian.
Yeah, it's in Cyrillic.
Cyrillic, yeah.
If we're just going to start with the first one here, 377,000 Yemenis a genocide. Yes. Yep. Lots of people called that a genocide.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like, a quick Google search for Yemen genocide will have articles such as from The Guardian. When will America stop participating in Yemen's genocidal war? By Mark Weisbrot. Like, this is the level of Hasbara has never been so easily debunkable via Google search. That it warms my heart a little bit, because it's always been stupid, but I've never felt it was that stupid before, you know?
Again, this is, I think, one of the main points is that if you want to, if you want to, but if you're someone who is, again, in that, you know, pre-change stage and you have no interest in actually learning something and you are really looking for stuff that confirms your priors, which is basically what these guys are doing,
yeah,
this is perfect. This is gold.
Yeah.
They said that at 1.1 million views.
Yeah. So, 1.1 million views. Which
people working on somebody.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of people who are looking at it and they're going, yeah. So if they're not calling those other genocides a genocide, why are they so obsessed with a couple thousand, dead children in 2 months?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun little game that I think a lot of Zionists like to play, which is just like people who are it's not that, the genocide is bad. It's that it's like, well, it's not that bad compared to like other things. So let's
The other thing about it is like how unworldly a lot of these people are.
Oh yeah.
And just not even having any experience of knowing that, people were kind of mad about Yemen.
Wait, you weren't around for that?
Yeah.
It is a strange thing where it's you kind of go like, did you just wake up just now to politics. And yeah. I kind of think that that's the case for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I had noticed that like there is a good amount of people who like maybe were never political before who are like this is awakened a sort of nationalism in a lot of them. And so it's like the first time that they've ever cared about a political issue and they're like mad that most people are on the other side of it. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Yeah. So it's very strange. And it's a lot of fun, but, I want to talk about an organization that if you are in the Los Angeles area, and I'm sure it's everywhere, but, I only know it from my own neighborhood. It's called JewBelong.org.
Oh my God.
Now, I'm not sure what you know about. Do you guys have, you're in New York, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys have Jew Belong?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's a big one on the BQE. So if you're driving that, when I was driving to work, I would drive on the BQE going south. There was a giant one. I think there still is one, which I think it says, and a lot of them are kind of innocuous, you know, like it doesn't seem like anything that you would argue with. And so the one there says, we're only 70 years removed from the gas chambers, so I don't think calling out Jew hate is a bad thing or something, or is uncalled for, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed the paragraphs, like the sentences are getting longer. like it used to be real short. It just, you know, it would just be like, it would be something along the lines of a cutesy thing about like, mm-hmm. you know, being a Jew and just like, you know, hey, that means that on Christmas, the movie theaters are free, you know, like,
yeah, or it was like,
you know, we also like Chinese food.
It was like Fran Drescher on the nanny level observations of
yes.
New York Jewish culture half the time.
Yes, it was always like it was cutesy. It was it like you could tell it was coming. I feel like early on you couldn't really tell politically what this was about. Mm-hmm. It was just like it was just kind of, oh, this is an org making like it's just affirmation signs in LA being like, it's okay that you're Jewish. And you're like, okay, yeah. Thank you. Like there
was like, I think like yeah. networking, like singles events and stuff like that. That was the main
yeah.
thing originally.
Yeah. Like that makes sense to me because of the way it kind of, so we had, yeah, we don't care which half of you is Jewish. JewBelong.org. Mm-hmm. Okay, sweet. Cultural Jews died in the gas chambers too. Speak up. Okay, sure. You know, can a billboard end anti-Semitism? No, but you're not a billboard. JewBelong.org. It's like, okay, like, I didn't have necessarily a problem with it earlier on, but as ever since the 7th, screeds, like this is like, it's like rage posting, but they're putting it on like physical mediums. And so some of the ones that have come out since the 7th have been insane. So we have Jew Belong put out this. Enough with the sanctimonious quote, I want a ceasefire and my words are important because my grandparents were Holocaust survivors, close quote. Well, I'm speaking for the ones who didn't survive and I want the goddamn hostages back. JewBelong.org. So, lot to unpack there. First of all, too long. Not going to fit into a regular billboard.
No editor.
No editor. This has literally got to be just one person.
Yeah.
I it's clearly just a person. And so also like this is a very specific grievance. I want a ceasefire yeah. and my words are important because my grandparents were Holocaust. You're talking to like, who are you talking to? You know, is this like, so is this someone, you know, or is this, and also yeah. are we shitting on the families of Holocaust survivors in this?
Apparently.
That's like, there's a, Man.
It's also like, I know, like, this is one very specific person, but there are also people who have said, like, well, I have relatives who died in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, and this is not what I want.
Yes.
And she's just like aiming, like, very, it's like a keyhole satellite aimed at like one guy.
Yeah. It should just end
who,
with
like showed up to a pro-Palestinian protest with a sign.
Yeah, it should, it should end with, you know, with this cut the bull crap, Greg. Like, it's like, we know there's someone you're talking to, but also there have been, I mean, you know, there's tons of Jewish American anti-Zionists who come from families of Holocaust survivors and mm-hmm. who, you know, very rightly and correctly talk about how never again doesn't just apply to Jewish people. It applies mm-hmm. broadly to any situation in which you have like a growing genocidal sentiment within a society. And like to shit on that, to use other Holocaust people, like people who didn't survive the Holocaust, as your, I don't know, as your avatar for anger, is just like, it's like sickening, and also hilariously tone deaf, and like the amount of tone deafness has been a lot of fun to watch with JewBelong.org. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The amazing thing with Jew Belong, I think, is like, I remember, and I'm sure we've all experienced this time when we had like Twitter and it was on our phones. And that's one of the things I like about TikTok is that like you can start saying something stupid and halfway through you're like, I should shut the fuck up. But with Twitter, it was like, because we all grew up in the Mavis Beacon generation, we can type way too fucking fast. Mm-hmm. And like the thought is like on the internet before we have a time to think about it. Mm-hmm. And like we all said something stupid, but this person like does that with like 30-foot billboards.
Yeah. 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 And like, you know, you can delete a tweet. I mean, it'll exist, you know, if someone, you know, keeps a receipt, but you can delete it. This is like someone who is there. This is, you're setting it in stone. This is someone who is like that confident in their tweet game. And the thing is it wasn't always tweets. So according to the internet, the brain behind these ads. Oh, hold on. Yes. Is Archie Grotzman, the co-founder of Jubalong, whose original marketing campaign, So You Ate you ate Bacon, God has other things to worry about. And when you when you need a ketubah and someone to tell you what it is, were admired by some for bringing an openness and sass to the often stodgy world of organized Jewish lives.
I'll give you this much. She's clever. Like, she's not dumb.
No, well, that's the thing.
She's creative, yeah.
Like, early on, there was a lot of cleverness to it, or kind of just like cutesiness to it, where you're just like, all right, you know, this person's having a little fun, trying to like make it a little bit loose.
Well, but if I remember correctly, she's also the where she got all this money was she was the one behind like the storage ads.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yes. If you were in New York during George W. Bush's presidency, the hot pink signs might feel familiar. They recall that's fine. They recall the provocative billboards for Manhattan mini storage that blared slogans like, if you don't like gay marriage, don't get gay married. And with a picture of a wire hanger, your closet space is shrinking as fast as her right to choose. Like, you know, this was kind of the work, like sort of a liberal, you know, Democrat kind of posting. You know, this is a slogan creator for the liberals.
It's compact, it's catchy, it's memorable.
Yes.
Like, she's good at what she does.
She's good at what she does. It's good marketing, but much like many boomer brains and, you know, a lot of brains of younger people that I know, after October 7th, brain broke. And so we got, you know, we got posts like this one. Yes, we light a menorah. But call it a person aura if that's less triggery. Jubalong.org. We're talking about like this is just a complete pivot.
This is, yeah, she turf pivoted.
Yeah, yeah, very fast. And I think that is going to be another thing that we follow is how many people will go from like Zionism to, oh, I'm also a TERF now. Because it all falls in line in the same kind of like reactionary space of just like, you know, I'm someone who's mad at the green haired college kids and who they all have ADHD and they all are bi curious and trans, and what happened to regular America? It's funny how quickly like liberal Americans are turning into conservatives, where they're just like, I remember in my day there was only gay people and lesbians, and now there's too many letters. And it's like, this is
yeah, it's a space that like I think Barry Weiss very much spent the last 5 years, maybe not creating, but she definitely was like kind of pivotal in expanding it.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is she'll say like, well, you know, these young people, it's like, I'm older than Barry Weiss. I think you are too. Like, she's not.
I know, I probably am.
She's like three, she's like, I think she's like, what, 37, 36, something like that. Like,
God, am I fucking older than Barry Weiss? That makes me so sad. You know, it's because we chose the wrong career, dude. We should have just been trying to get professors fired this whole time. Do you know how rich we would be if we had just taken this path?
I could have done it. I was writing for the Forward, and then eventually, like, yeah, one of the things that like really kind of put me down this path was just not wanting to put up with like their shit, which was very much like Barry Weiss adjacent.
Yeah. And man, like the way the split in the forward has been another interesting thing to watch in the last few years. I knew a lot of like, I think thoughtful, smart people who would write for the forward and then have to work with people like Batya, who like fucking like would is now a regular presence on Fox News, I think.
Yeah, I think she works for Newsweek, and yeah, she'll be at Fox News and other places. Yeah.
So, but yeah, continuing on with Jubalong, some good news out of all the darkness of what's happened with Jubalong is so we had one of their signs was that Hamas is your problem too.
Mm-hmm.
And wonderfully, JVP did a little bit of action, a little bit of street art.
They liberated it.
They liberated the sign, and they changed it to "Let's be clear, Zionism is your problem too, and Jews for free Palestine" is the sign instead of Jubalong. And here's a little bit statement from it. Jubalong co-founder Archie Gottsman had strong words in response to the defacement. "The vandals who deface the billboards have made it crystal clear that they are pro-terrorists, and that should outrage and alarm Americans," Gottsman said in an email to Jay. Quote, "The billboards merely stated that Hamas is a problem for all Americans, as Hamas wants to destroy the Western way of life and American values. Jubalong believes in the goal of peace for Palestinian and Israeli people and is deeply troubled that terrorists are standing in the way of that peace."
Hold on a second. I just want to like zero in on that one part there.
Please do it.
And I've started to see this a lot more. And it's so funny because it coexists with something that it can't, is this notion that anti-Semitism is a proxy for anti-Western values.
Yes.
Which is, again, like a very like 9/11, post 9/11 era thing, when a lot of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and actions in Pakistan and other things were co-signed and aided by Israel. And Israel very much positioned itself, you know, not as this indigenous movement, but very much as like the frontier and the bulwark against, you know, terrorism and anti-Americanism.
Yeah.
And
the Western outpost.
The Western outpost, exactly.
In the Middle East, yeah.
But it's like, it was the exact opposite. Like most anti-Semitism was this Western infringing upon, you know, this group in their own midst that they said were against Western values.
Right.
So it's like the exact opposite. And again, this is the exact opposite of like an indigenous rights movement, because indigenous rights are very much in 100% conflict with Western values.
Yes.
And imperialism and colonialism. And
yes. So
it's like, it's like they're trying to hold these two different ideas in their head, and they're completely incompatible.
Yeah, it's like part of the cognitive dissonance of Zionist kind of like narrative. And as Hasbara is, they're doing two things at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
They are taking the stance that, you know, for their younger, more liberal minded people, like, you know, this is an indigenous rights movement. Like, actually, we're woke, you know, while at the same time saying that they are, you know, they reflect all the Western values of freedom and democracy and all of these things that, it puts them completely in conflict with the idea of like being these. Because as you were saying, like if you talk to, you know, European anti-Semites, the Jews being a Western people with the same values was not the charge.
Yeah, no,
like
not at all.
There is, and to have that be your fallback is insane. But beyond that, also, Hamas wants to destroy the Western way of life and American values. Like, this is something that I have seen now, ever since people lost their minds. The big thing that I've been hearing, and then this is I've been hearing personally in my life, is you think you're not next when talking about Hamas. And I just want to say, I want to dig into that logistically. What do they think Hamas is? Do they think Hamas is in America? Do they think they are supervillains with an entire, like, mole people who live under the ground, who are going to, like, dig a ton? Because it's the way people have been acting, I swear to God, especially in LA, in the entertainment industry, you'd think that Hamas had dug a tunnel through the center of the earth straight into Brentwood.
Through the fault lines?
Yeah, through the fault lines, like through the San Andreas Fault, and then into, like, fucking, you know, Los Feliz, with, like, the mission to kidnap only the most successful comedians. You know, like, not just any Jews, but, like, the ones who are the most scared are the ones with the most accolades, I swear to God. Like, my wife has been yelled at by two Academy Award nominated people about how she is making them feel unsafe.
Not even winners. Nominees.
They didn't win. They didn't win. So, you know, if they had won, maybe they'd feel a little bit more safe.
That's one of the perks.
Yeah.
Hamas insurance.
Literally, it's like part of the gift bag. You go to the Vogue party, you get the gift bag, you get a car, you get a nice watch.
You get a little Iron Dome, like, power just for you.
You get an Iron Dome, a mini Iron Dome just for your mansion in Bel Air. Yeah. The idea of Hamas, it's like part of this, like, conflation that they've been trying ever since, like, the 8th, which is Hamas equals ISIS.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just Israel's problem in this very specific part of Israel in the land. You know what I mean? It's like geographically very much contained thing, Hamas.
Yeah.
But it's like, as soon as they try to conflate it as being the same as ISIS, then they're bringing up, ISIS, you know, this is part of an ideology that, like, you know, took over not just the Middle East, but there was, like, mass shootings in fucking Europe and in the United States. Like, they're trying to Al-Qaeda-ize, for lack 100%. Of a better word.
Al-Qaeda never was even that big. Like, Al-Qaeda had, like, they had a big hit.
They had one really big hit. Their early shit was kind of good with the, you know, the USS Cole.
That was like the Bleach of Al-Qaeda.
That was the Sub Pop years. That was when they were the indie record they put out, and they're like, oh shit, they did that? Yeah, all right, yeah. And then David Geffen came in and he said, we're gonna make you guys huge. Do 9/11. But yeah, like, the idea of Hamas being this Al-Qaeda, like, you know, splinter cell organization with, like, you know, there was people saying that they're trying to get in through Mexico. And I'm like, oh, man, they are really banking on the American public's general ignorance about, like, Arab organizations.
It's not a bad bet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good, I understand it. Like, but as you know, when you're familiar with Hamas and you're familiar with Israel and the situation they got over there, it's very ridiculous sounding, because it's an insanely specific thing that they are trying to universalize.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but it's not, like, unprecedented in that it's very much like the Orientalist view of a lot of these groups, and the moral panicky, you know, notion where it's, this thing is just bigger than it could possibly ever be logistically.
Yeah.
Like when Oprah was going on about those ring parties or the satanic panic.
Yeah.
Where they're putting broken glass in Halloween candy or whatever it is. And rainbow fentanyl skittles. and this notion also that these groups are barbarians who just kill for no other reason than that's what they enjoy doing.
Bloodlust.
There's no aim, there's no ideology, there's no sense of humanity in there. It's like there's this entire group of millions of people, the Palestinians, who hate Jews so much that they're willing to sacrifice their children, their homes, their livelihoods, their farms, just to make you look bad.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's what they're all about. It's racist and also just fantastic in a way that is like unbelievable. It's just not realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's turned Hamas into like a supervillain status. Like they need people to believe that Hamas has the ability to like get your children in Santa Monica. Because, you know, they otherwise, if you look at what Hamas actually is and how they are very much in a very specific geographical location that is literally surrounded by walls and barbed wire, you're like, oh, this is feeling less like Showtime's Homeland. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like this is not a Tom Clancy novel about like secret cells of Islamic terrorists. This is
no. And again, Gaza, specific. Like you said, is very like it's relatively it's small. It's about 25 miles long. Mm-hmm. You know, and I forgot how many miles wide. It's proportionate to like Manhattan,
right?
You know, twice the size, like long, and I think width.
Yeah,
which, you know, is something that a person in semi-decent shape, you know, every year, hundreds of people run that distance in New York and L.A. and Boston and wherever.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's where they are. And again, I think somebody else pointed out once that like 85% of Hamas fighters are orphans. Like they lost either one or both of their parents, you know, in either, you know, the campaign in 2014, which killed 2,400 people, or in other campaigns.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, the point is that like Hamas is not this global threat. It is not something that you can apply as kind of clumsily as you would apply to any Islamic fundamentalist terrorist organization. And
it's part of this this habit, you know, this long racist habit of Orientalism, which is the West projecting its worst fears and its worst, not just projecting itself, like its worst qualities onto the people that it's trying to harm.
Right.
You know, the U.S. is the global threat. The U.S. is the one with bases in I don't know how many hundreds of countries, which has like a stranglehold on Central Africa, which has bases in Australia, you know, all over the place, you know, which is killing people in countries, which has invaded, which has like interfered with governments. That's the global threat. We're the global threat.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, we're also, you know, we're the good guys though.
Yeah. We have
America. America do the good things. America, but America good. We can all agree. America bring McDonald's. America bring happy. America make happy. So we're
The dollar menu does slap.
The dollar menu slaps. You think that they have the dollar menu in Africa? No. But if you think they have the dollar menu, this is a version of argument. I wish I could just be this guy. You know, the guy who's just like America good because I can get hamburger. That's free, dumb.
It's low effort and it's high paying, which is really what we all want.
Oh, man. Yeah, low effort, high pay, and you pay money to eat more hamburger. That's all I want. but yeah, you know, in conclusion, this, you know, Hamas equals ISIS equals global threat equals be scared is... it's just so phony and so cheap and, of course, fake. And, you know, that's not to say that, like, you know, once again, on this podcast, we do not support anyone.
You lose your job for something like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. You don't support no one? But yeah, you know, it's just the idea of trying to make, I don't know, the people who I know in Culver City, like, scared of Hamas is like, it is a way to just make you be on the lookout for Hamas. And then as soon as you see a college kid with a ceasefire shirt on, you're just like, maybe that's Hamas. And maybe that is
us. And that's what a lot of, like, did you see, I don't know if it wasn't an SNL sketch. It was somebody, again, who had enough money to make this relatively well-produced skit about the two college students. And I think one of them had green hair and they're both clearly queer-coded.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Saying, you know,
it was Israel. Israel's like big late night sketch show, right?
Yeah,
I think it's like their Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
it's like Sunday night. You know, well, I guess they could still do it Saturday night. It's after Shabbat.
Yom Shabbat Night Live. Live from Tel Aviv.
Yeah, yeah. Live from Tel Aviv.
It's Moshe Shabbos.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. No, that is like two queer coded, American college students, mm-hmm. who are just like, we support Hamas. Yeah.
The German for some reason.
Yeah. This is, my Israeli accent is going to change multiple times throughout. Cause I'm trying to do an Israeli accent of them doing an American, queer accent. So it's a lot going on.
You need to get McNulty to do that. Like,
yeah, I know. He would crush it.
What's his name?
Dominic West.
Dominic West, yeah.
Yeah, because he knows how to just, like, really, like, say, fuck it. Who needs to get the accent right? I'm just going to just make it weird and be confident about it. But I saw that sketch. It's the same joke over and over again. It's just
the same joke over and over again. And again, I think one of the things that a lot of people should always pay attention to is when you see propaganda out there, like, what is the really well-produced stuff? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the stuff that clearly has, like, lighting and multiple takes and a lot, and versus what is the people just kind of standing out on the street, you know, talking to a camera.
Right.
You know, there's another one that went out on the Israel TikTok, which was this scripted and like well-lit, short, like 3 or 4 minute thing where a woman was saying, well, I was sexually assaulted by a Hamas fighter. And she goes to a world organization to say, well, we saw her, we can't help legitimate resistance. Like, that sort of thing. Again, well-produced, well-funded. I don't want to say well-produced, but it's clearly got money behind it.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that one. Yeah, that is the one where, what country are you from? And she was like, Israel. And they were like, we can't help you. And that was, you know, it's, listen, Israel's social media people are, they're not sending their best, and neither are their, heavy-handed attempts at shaming institutions like Amnesty International.
And they don't have to, because the main thing that I've come to, like, really believe about a lot of Hasbara is that it's not aimed at us. It's not aimed at Palestinian supporters. It's not even, I don't think, aimed at people who are on the fence.
Yeah.
It is aimed mostly at their own supporters. It's internal against both. I'm not even going to say Israelis, because a lot of, like, it's aimed at Americans.
Very much Americans, yes.
Yeah, which is, it's a technique that was really, like, Bibi Netanyahu, before he was prime minister, before he was a politician, really was one of the people who, like, pioneered this technique of, like, appealing to specifically American Jews and their fear of anti-Semitism,
right.
And this notion of this contradiction between, well, if you support, you know, the women of Hollywood but not the women of, you know, the Gaza envelope, then clearly that's anti-Semitism.
Right.
You know, if you support the indigenous people of the Amazon and United States but not Tel Aviv, then you're clearly anti-Semitic. Right. You know, it's like, clearly, like, the indigenous people of Israel who came here and put McDonald's
they made hamburgers.
You know?
Yes. I mean, listen, eating McDonald's been part of indigenous culture, I think, for thousands of years, and I think we know that to be true. So we thank you, Netanyahu, for pointing that out in such a great fashion. Speaking of the Amazon, I want to close out this podcast with a little palate cleanser. Excuse me. A little palate cleanser about how we're going to solve the conflict in the Middle East with a small clip from the wonderful, brilliant, genius political scientist, Marianne Williamson. And
what's she do now?
This is I think this is an older clip of a little interview she's doing with a familiar face, Mr. James Cameron.
I want to tell you this. I was in Israel, mm-hmm. and I was talking to some Israeli and Palestinian peacemakers, and I said, I'm telling you the truth. I said, well, you know, the Great Mother doesn't choose sides. According to Avatar, the Great Mother doesn't choose sides. She's there to protect balance.
Yes.
She doesn't pick a winner. She protects balance. And yes. Do you know what the Palestinian and the Israelis in the room, do you know their reaction?
What'd they say? They thought about it.
They
That's
nodded.
Good.
And I think it was because some of them had seen Avatar.
That made me feel really good. And I think we can close it out there. Thank you, Marianne Williamson. I think that we all need to see Avatar. Ben Ziggy, thank you so much for coming on the first ever episode of Bad Hasbara.
Thank you for having me. I feel like a pioneer.
Yeah, you are. You are literally a settler. Thank you all for listening. You know, if you want to email fraudcast@gmail.com, and if you want all of the content that we do over at the Fraudcast, patreon.com/fraudcast. And mm-hmm. Ben, where can people find you?
You can find me at Evil Knadel on TikTok or Instagram. That's EVELKNEIDEL. It's like Evil Knievel, but Knadel, like a matzo ball.
Yeah. So
that is a mnemonic for like five people.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is great content. I love watching what you do. And, you know, I'm just glad there are some people from Jew Book who are still out here and, you know, speaking truth to, I would say power, but it's to like other kids. You know, we're not kids anymore, though. Now we're old. We're fucking older than Barry Weiss.
I'm 40.
I'm gonna kill myself. I'm gonna fucking kill myself. All right, fellas. Until next time. I haven't figured out what the sign out is. Lila Toes? I don't know. I'll figure something out.
There is a list.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Until next time. There is a list. Karate us, taking Molly us, Michael Jackson us, Yamaha keyboards us, Jar Jar Binks on us, Andor was us, Heath Ledger Joker us, Endless Forensics us, Happy Meals was us, McDonald's was us, Being Happy us, Bikram Yoga us, Eating Food us, Breathing Air us, Drinking Water us. We invented all that shit.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.